This webcast is a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. More information at sd.net.
Forstrup, Otten, Partridge, Rush, Russell, Schoenbeck, Smith, Soholt, Solano, Stalzer, Steinhauer, Sutton, White, Wick, Wismer, and Youngberg. We have a quorum, Mr. President.
Thank you. Clerk will call the roll of the House.
Anderson, Bartles, Barthel, Beal, Bordeaux, yeah. Borglum, Bruner, Chafee, Chase, Schwach, Dennert, Deutsch, Diedrich, Duba, Duval, Fink, Freimuller, Glanzer, Goodwin, Gosch, Greenfield, Lana, Gross, Hammack, Hansen, Healy, Howard, Hunhoff, Jensen, Kevin, Johns, Johnson, Chris, Johnson, David, Carr, Koth, Lake, Latterell, Lesmeister, Livermont, Marty, McCleary, Mills, Milstead, Miskimmins, Mullally, Olson, Otten, Herman, Perry, Peterson, Kent, Peterson, Sue, Pischke, Post, Poirier, Quam, Randolph, Rasmussen, Reed, Reimer, Ring, Rounds, Saba, Shanefish, Smith, Jamie, St. John, Steele, Sullivan, Weiss, Wheezy, Willitson, York, Zickman, Speaker Haugard. Mr. President, there's a quorum present.
Thank you. Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It is my distinct honor to be here today to introduce someone that many of you already know. Rodney Berdow is a member of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, where he has worked to expand opportunities and programs available on the reservation. Rodney currently serves currently lives in Rosebud, where he grew up, raised his family, and now serves as a tribal president, a position that he has held since 2005. Please help me join in welcoming Rosebud Sioux Tribal President Rodney Berdow. Thank you. You would remain standing for the song and for the prayer, and also for the song that follows.
Good afternoon. My name is Rodney Berdow. First off, with the prayer, I'll have Mr. Wasey, his holy horse from the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, and the singers today will be Michael Pretty Voice Crane and Gabriel Red Kettle.
Hoyat Hunkash Lava Khantka, Yota Wash Akiwa Tamakata Kahito Piukha, Omniche Kilet Hunkash Lahoech, and you are big to Yukha Hitch, which Ashana, we are Kiwogla Kikilena, Tachinikta, Awaik Samashti, you are big to Nawablaze, Yukha Hitch, Taki Chunki Lawayat, Taun Pikte, let us at Hunkash Lahoechichi, Mushunkilapi. Oh, Creator, today we come to you and ask you for guidance and understanding for the decisions that are to be made about not only the Native people, but the non-Natives also. Creator, we ask you to bless each and every one of the leaders that sit in here and put a good thought in the mind so they have an understanding to make good decisions.
Oh,
Please be seated.
Rodney Bordo Imachapi, Nasi Chungo Lakota Oyate, Itancha Himacha. Hello, relatives. I greet you all with a good heart. My name is Rodney Bordo, and I'm the president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. I thank you for this very kind introduction. I would like to thank Governor Noem and Lieutenant Governor Roden for the honor of addressing this distinguished body today. Before I go any further, I want to acknowledge my friends and relatives from the other tribes here today. First, we got Chairman Ella Robertson. Ella, we... Chairman Lester Thompson, Jr. of Crow Creek. Chairman Boyd Garneau of the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe. Councilman Bryce Inderwoods from the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe. I also want to acknowledge Chief John Spotted Tail of the Sichango Lakota Oyate. And carrying our Eagle staff was Philemon Two Eagle from the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, our treaty office. Philemon. Okay. And we also have Mr. Wayne Bear Shield of the Chauncey Eagle Horn Post 125 of Rosebud. Wayne. I want to add that the Chauncey Eagle Horn Post, Legion Post out of Rosebud is the first Native American Legion Post in South Dakota and also in the United States. It was established in 1919, and Chauncey Eagle Horn was a member of our tribe. He was killed in action in World War I. Okay, my comments today are basically going to be generally from the Rosebud when I get into the education part, the economic development part, but overall it's going to represent generally what we're all facing on every one of our reservations. I want to acknowledge the truly historic nature of Governor Noem's election. I, along with many other South Dakotans, watched as she took the oath of office and delivered her inauguration speech. I was struck by what she said about wanting to be the governor for the next generation. One of the things that we tribal leaders are charged with is making decisions for the betterment of the next seven generations. So I guess that makes the Lakota big picture people, because we're always looking forward, thinking about the next generations, and that's always perpetual as we move forward. I want to speak a little bit about the treaties. Those who are avid students of the state's history would know that we comprise the Ocheti Shakowin, which many call the Great Sioux Nation. Some of you may know that we, the Ocheti Shakowin, have a distinct political legal status. This status is based upon our inherent sovereignty. We here in South Dakota and the surrounding region, we've been here for thousands of years, and we have a relationship with the United States government through our treaties. That relationship requires intergovernmental consultation on a government-to-government basis as well as a nation-to-nation basis. So if South Dakota wants better relations with tribal governments, South Dakota must honor and respect the treaties that were made with us. The list of treaties in the jurisprudence of this country are many. The U.S. Constitution acknowledges tribal sovereignty and the Commerce Clause by charging the U.S. Congress with the responsibility to regulate trade with Indian tribes. The Indian Commerce Clause, by its own term, acknowledges tribes as sovereigns. In honor of our children who may be watching a speech on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I would urge everyone to look up the Marshall Trilogy. This forms the basic framework of the federal Indian law, and it extends from 1823 to 1932, starting with the Johnson versus McIntosh, Cherokee Nation versus Georgia, and Worcester versus Georgia. It is also important to remember that part of Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution, where it declares that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land. And the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, and anything in the Constitution or laws of the state to the contrary notwithstanding. Education is very important. Knowing where you have been helps to illuminate the future. As many of you know, this is the fourth State of the Tribe speech. I watched each of the last three speeches to review where we are and where we have been in recent past. Some of the challenges that have been facing Indian country in the last several years still plague us to this day. One of the big issues is racism. It is still present, and we read about it, the incidents, not only in the newspaper, but in social media. Another issue I want to touch upon is mental health and suicide. It is really tough for our children to grow up in a world where their most embarrassing moments and their biggest failures are all there for the world to see on Facebook. Cyberbullying is one of the unfortunate byproducts of Facebook. This has contributed in some part to the rising rate of suicides in our communities, not only on the reservations. I want to interrupt my speech for a moment of silence for those relatives we have lost to suicide. Thank you. We also suffer from a lack of mental health resources. At our Indian Health Services facility in Rosebud, we have one psychologist for a reservation of 27,000 tribal members. To put that in perspective, this would be equivalent of 8 psychologists to serve the city of Sioux Falls. Local counseling services and mission and a nearby winter often have significant backlogs as to when appointments and assessments can be scheduled. We have programs on the Rosebud such as Tiwahe Glu Kanipi, which is bringing back the family, which is at Sinte Gleshka University, the Tukala Inagio program, which is a mentoring program, and the St. Francis Mission Suicide Hotline. These programs do innovative things like equine therapy, mentorship, and some other counseling services. Many of you are aware of the National Suicide Hotline and perhaps even the state hotline. I want to briefly share my experience as a volunteer for the St. Francis Mission Suicide Hotline. We have 2 cell phones when I was working there, and they had a local number. And a volunteer would take the phone for a week or a weekend, and then in my situation, I took it for a weekend. The understanding is that when that phone rings, you have to hang up, stop, drop everything what you're doing, no matter how important it is, and answer that call. Despite your training, when that phone rings, anyone gets a little bit apprehensive, and I was totally shocked. That phone rang, and I kind of froze for a while. And I answered it, and I talked to an elderly lady. Now, she was having a rough time, so we talked about 20 minutes. But it was really enlightening because she was very lonely in her home, and she was feeling real bad, so we talked for a number of minutes, and at the end of the call, it went very well. She was very happy, and it really enlightened me because I knew the elder. I am certain that this deficiency is present on all of our reservations. I would urge this body to do what it can to foster partnerships with rural health care and our reservations. We have lobbied to Congress over the last several years to get appropriations and grants for mental health services. These calls have largely gone unanswered and are not considered budget priorities for the Congress. One of the big problems we had with suicide was from 2006 to 2008 on the Rosebud. I was in my first and second year, second terms as president. And it was really disheartening for me because we had, I think, up to 34 people on a reservation committed suicide. And we lost quite a number of our relatives, young people, and we also lost a couple elders during that time. And it was tough. So I would urge this body and the governor to make the availability of mental health services and resources to those in rural South Dakota on a reservation a priority. This would assist future generations of South Dakotans. Partnerships with healthcare systems such as like Avera and Sanford, and now we're working with the Massachusetts General Hospital out of Boston, and they're going to start working with us on these as well. And these all can serve to help immediately to improve the prospects of those suffering from mental illness. We are all South Dakotans, and we have a moral duty to take care of each other. Another problem plaguing not only our reservations, but the entire state of South Dakota, the entire nation, is methamphetamine and opioids. So the next challenge facing us, the Ocheti Shakuming, is a methamphetamine and opioid epidemic. As many in this room are aware, the epidemic is depriving children of their parents, families of their relatives, communities of their neighbors and friends. We routinely have drug dealers who are not from our reservation come onto the reservation. They are doing our people a great deal of harm. We are working on the implementation of the Tribal Law and Order Act, TLOA, which would allow tribal courts to do enhanced sentencing as well as implementation of the Violence Against Women's Act. Part of that implementation will allow tribal courts to prosecute non-Indians in tribal courts for domestic violence cases. We have the ability to do that. We have learned through experience that what happens in your communities affects our communities and vice versa. Dealers with legal issues in your cities often move their businesses on the reservations and come into our communities. We are taking steps to learn who these people are. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe is a recipient of the Tribal Access Program, which will allow us to place conviction records into the crime database, which would assist all law enforcement throughout the state to understand who we are dealing with. Admittedly, we are still working on the details as to how these convictions are handled and disseminated. We need to engage with one another to talk about agreements and ways that we can address meth in the criminal context. I invite Governor Noem and leaders of the South Dakota House and Senate to come to the Rosebud where we can talk about ways where we can help each other. I would go one step further and suggest a government-to-government meth and opioid summit where tribal leaders and government leaders would interact. We recognize that those suffering from methamphetamine and opioid abuse need treatment. We are raising our mandatory minimum sentencing with the expectations that we can get more of those who are suffering the treatment that they require. We are providing inpatient services while they are incarcerated in our correctional facility. As a part of that treatment, we are offering spiritual healing as well. Healthcare. As you may know, one of the first items in the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1868 was that our people were to be provided with health care. We do not believe that the federal government is living up to this responsibility. In our luncheon with Governor Noem earlier, we all agreed that the IHS is a failure, and she is willing to work with us, so we will move forward in that direction. Our hospitals are underfunded and understaffed. In fact, we are informed that our hospital is funded at the 1989 level. And that's when our new hospital down the Rosebud opened up. Beautiful. Started out real good, but they kept us at that 1989 level. And that was back before the internet. So, you know, you kind of think about that. We have no way to get that reassessed or obtain recurring funds for the IHS because it is not funded at a level that can go around to make up for that loss for us. So we're going to be working on that. Due to this situation, our people are forced to go to other hospitals and face the prospect of financial ruin. Some are flown out and handed a bill after the fact. Medical care, like I said, is a treaty right. For this reason, I would like to move on to discuss Medicaid expansion. And I know this is a tough situation with this body, but Medicaid expansion was one of those election issues nationally last fall. In fact, in neighboring Nebraska, they voted in Medicaid expansion because it would bring in 11,000 jobs and generate $1.3 billion annually of new economic activity, according to a study that was commissioned by the Nebraska Hospital Association. There it was estimated by the study that it would have added 90,000 low-income citizens. In South Dakota, it is estimated that about 44,000 new eligible patients would be added. This would provide the means to assess private sector health care should they choose to. It would assist in providing the Indian Health Service with additional revenue to provide more access to care and services, as well as supplemental funding for the patient-referred care, which refers us out to other hospitals throughout the state. Right now at Rosebud, only emergency cases are approved due to significant budgeting shortfalls. The tragedy here is that the tribe is made worse when you consider that the government shutdown that we are currently navigating the effects of. As I alluded to above, it would help South Dakota. I'm informed that this would result in a 90-10 split, with the federal government covering 90% and the state covering 10%. This would allow for increased reimbursement rates for ambulance transport and for behavioral health transports. We understand that the hospitals have a significant amount of uncompensated care. In 2011, it was $74 million. Of this $74 million, $34 million was considered charity care, and the other $40 million was classified as bad debt. I read recently that the City of Rapid, that recently wrote off $1.7 million in uncollectible ambulance bills. Medicaid expansion would do much to lessen those losses. The private sector would benefit from Medicaid expansion because timely payment would be a quick result. Those small-town clinics would benefit just as much as the big city hospitals. I urge this great body to take up Medicaid expansion. It would cover more people and bring jobs and other economic benefits to the state. It has the added benefit of being the right thing to do. If this body needs testimony from our tribal members to share our stories and demonstrate the need for Medicaid expansion, please let us know. We're happy to help the legislature with this. Education. I mentioned earlier that we try to consider the best interests of our tribe's seven generations into the future. part of that analysis leads us to education. In order for tribes in our state to thrive, we must ensure that our children get the best education possible. We need to do better. Let me pass on some statistics and then lend some encouragement for our youth and hope that the next several generations of South Dakotas can succeed. And I know we have representatives, hopefully, from the St. Francis Indian School, and I hope they made it up. Well, these stats I'm talking about are three high schools on the Rosebud, which would be the Todd County School District, the St. Francis Indian School, and the White River School District. Roughly one in five Native students can read at grade level. On the average, 290 children start high school. 120 of them graduate in 4 years. 30 of them enroll in college, and 20% graduate from college, which leaves us with 6 graduates on average. In the 2014 graduating class, the three high schools generated 5 college graduates in 2018. Statewide, more students in South Dakota are taking advanced placement tests, and it has doubled from the prior year. Only 3% of American Indian students have access to advanced placement classes. While more of our kids are taking the ACT, only 8% are scoring at college ready. There is no need-based program in South Dakota that we are aware of to assist our kids as our future leaders. We are not without hope in this area. Our kids are starting to dream big. The Rosebud Sioux Tribe's Education Department, in partnership with Teach for America, completed a survey of our local high school students. Among the findings were that 75% indicated that they wanted to be in a four-year university, tech school, or tribal college after graduation. It was interesting for me to learn that a four-year university away from our homes, away from the reservations, was by far the most popular choice. One area of success that we are proud of is that the Todd County Middle School, which is one of the schools that the state invested through Governor Dugard's National Achievement School Grant, which the legislature did fund, they grew more in literacy rates than 62% of the schools in the United States. At Todd County High School, students grew more than 70% in language, English language arts, and then more than 63% in math. There are some other after-school programs that are working very well to close the gap. One such organization that is helping our youth is the Boys and Girls Club of Rosebud. They have obtained science, technology, and engineering and math STEM programming and are currently working with elementary and middle school kids. We hope that partnerships with Teach for America, the South Dakota Board of Regents, and the South Dakota Jumpstart Program and the American Indian College Fund continue to work together. We feel this is especially important that local schools and organizations should align their goals and work with the goals of our tribal nations. I would encourage members of the House and Senate to look at ways that we can help those who show the drive and the ambition to pursue post-secondary education, whether it be at a four-year college, a two-year college, a technical school, or a tribal college. We would urge this body, the South Dakota Board of Regents, and other institutions of higher education to do what it can to promote tuition waivers for the children of the Ocheti Shakowee. Please do not be confused. We are not asking for a handout, just an opportunity. We are not asking for welfare. We are hardworking people who constantly pull ourselves up. Like everyone else, we want our kids to have a better life than we ourselves have had. I am within my family, I'm a first-generation college graduate. I attended Augustana College. Now it's Augustana University. I graduated from there, and I went on later
About 20 years after that, I got my Master of Arts degree from the Ogallala Lakota College, only to enhance myself to be a better leader in tribal government. In regard to economic development, Rosebud is open for business. I can say this about the other tribal reservations, the other 8 reservations. To me, small business development and job creations is the key to impact our high unemployment rates on our reservations. A friend of mine, a retired teacher, told me that, "Hey, Rodney, you know what?" He said, "If our students, if their parents had jobs, you would see a 20% increase in the test scores." And I believe that. And you can see it happening. You see it happening in the state where there's a lot of small business development in their communities, the cities, and we want that opportunity. So in talking to Governor Noem earlier, that's one of her big things, economic development, and we want to meet with her with that challenge and move forward with her in this great body. I want to take some time to point out some of the other positive things that are happening within the sovereign boundaries of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. We have some exciting work going on with our Economic Development Corporation, which is known as REDCO, Rosebud Economic Development Corporation. It serves as our business holding company. It operates 14 subsidiaries that does business locally and in other parts of the state and nationally. Our government contract division works closely with the Department of Defense, providing manufacturing and construction services. We built armor for helicopters to protect our troops, and our construction division is our fastest growing company. REDCO has created approximately 50 new jobs over the last several years. They are well-paying jobs with health insurance, retirement, and other benefits. We've created a food sovereignty initiative to help people eat healthier and begin growing their own food. We are promoting self-reliance. This past summer, we employed 18 tribal member youth interns to assist with this program. I was proud that our tribal members were able to come home for the summer and have work. Our legal infrastructure. One of the most coveted things for business that are looking to invest is certainty. We recognize that some have a skeptical view of tribal courts. I just want to highlight the Rosebud Sioux Tribe's legal community. We, like many others, have our own bar association, the Sichongo Oyate Bar Association. It is one of the few tribal bar associations in the country that has its own bar exam. This exam is given once a year. We also have a board of bar commissioners who regulate the practice of law on the Rosebud. We are fortunate to have a Rosebud Supreme Court. I want to publicly acknowledge our Chief Judge Sherman Marshall, a fluent Lakota speaker, who is a USD law school grad and has been on the bench for well over 30 years. He is also licensed by the South Dakota Bar. We have 2 other judges who are licensed by the South Dakota Bar who have practiced law over 30 years. We have a magistrate who is a Juris Doctor and has been on the bench for several years. We are moving to adopt a uniform commercial code and placing the code online where anyone will be able to pull up the law and move forward. We recognize that many states have adopted the UCC and have tweaked it to their own needs. Taxation. One of the things that businesses brings is tax revenue. We have celebrated South Dakota's victory in the Wayfair decision with the Supreme Court. Online retailers are now required to collect the taxes for the state and remit those payments. We agreed with the state that we are missing out on substantial tax revenues that were not being fully collected by companies such as Wayfair. We invite the governor and this great body to continue negotiations with the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, as well as other tribes, on a new tax compact that would account for those revenues. We understand that some retailers have begun collecting the taxes and remitting them to the state. So we're in the process of renegotiating our own tax compact.
Another controversial issue that I'm going to bring up, and I know it's a very tough one with you, is the Keystone XL pipeline. I want to address the one subject that gives our people great anxiety. It's the Keystone XL pipeline and the prospects of all that the project would bring. There are a great many things that trouble us about this project. Some of the current concerns are rooted in our responsibility to take care of Uchimaka, which is Grandmother Earth. As you know, our natural resources are finite. Once they are gone and depleted, they are gone. Adding to that anxiety was a leak that happened in Marshall County, South Dakota, that spilled over 400,000 gallons of oil. This apparently cost KXL nearly $10 million. And they paid the county $350,000. I submit to you that our natural resources are not for sale. KXL is sparing no expense in donating to political campaigns all along the route. What is missing is an appreciation of the long-term effects of an oil pipeline going through our sacred land. Landowners are being bought off ostensibly for there to be savings at the pump. We watch with some regret as this legislature passed Senate Bill 176 in March of 2017. We have come to describe this as the anti-protest law. This was presumably done in response to the protests that were occurring at Standing Rock. We believe that this was enacted with an eye toward limiting our people and our right to protest. Please understand, we would not be protesting for our grandchildren, but we are looking out for yours as well. We have the responsibility to be stewards of the land, and this project has the capacity to destroy these resources. I briefly mentioned the natural resources concern that we have. The other major concern that we have is a social concern. What levels of crime will our people experience due to the new arrivals outside of our communities? How many of these workers in the man camps will have substantial criminal records? In 2016, there were 5,712 cases of missing Indigenous women reported to the National Crime Information Center. We are fearful that these man camps will have a negative impact on our community. This matter is currently in litigation, and there is a court order in place halting the construction of the pipeline. Perhaps this is an opportunity for the state of South Dakota to be open and transparent when implementing SB 176. Again, we invite the governor and the leadership to an open discussion on this and other matters. One of the things happening within tribal governments is nation building. Most of us within South Dakota have constitutions that were basically a boilerplate of we call it the Indian Organization Act, a constitution that was created within the Bureau of Indian Affairs. And it's caused a lot of division within our people. So one of the processes through nation building is to develop our own constitutions, which will allow us to have our own language in there. It'll come from the heart, it'll come from the people through meetings. And the Ogallala Sioux tribe is currently in the process of doing that, and Rosebud is also doing that. Another part of that is building the capacity of our students to look at tribal government service to our people as a way to be contributors to our governments and to rebuild ourselves so that we can be there and develop our own economy. We don't like the federal government funding. If I had my way, I wouldn't even do federal government funding. I'd like to other cities in South Dakota, other communities, to have our own economic development. So this nation building is going to lead toward that. So we're going to be in the process of doing that. There's a National Governance Center out of Minnesota that's working with tribes nationwide. And the tribes in Oklahoma, the Chickasaw Nation, the Cherokee Nation, tribes in New York, you know, they've adopted this model. They've grasped economic development. They've developed their own constitutions, and they're doing well, very successful. So we need to get on that bandwagon and move forward. So Rosebud, as well as the other tribes, are going to be doing that. Another thing we're doing on the Rosebud, and I know the other tribes are doing this, is land restoration. In 1989, when our reservation was formed, we had 3.2 million acres. As a result of the Settlement Acts of the early 1900s, going from 1905, 1907, 1915, we lost probably about 2.3 million acres of our land was opened up for settlement, and that was against our approval. So it took down our Rosebud Sioux Tribe down to a level of 700,000 acres. And now, since through our leadership, my great-grandfather, Stephen Braybird, I see a picture of him in meeting with the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Chicago, him and other leaders, they formed a tribal land enterprise on our Rosebud Reservation, and we are purchasing our lands back, our former lands back. We're purchasing farms and ranches and restoring our land base. And part of that is to not only get our tribal members, we've been in ranching for a number of years, but we have a lot of young people who want to get into Indian, you know, into ranching. But a new effort that we're starting through the Rosebud Economic Development Corporation, as well as our tribal land enterprises, is to create farms, just like the Lower Brule Sioux Tribe has been very successful. We have good farmland located in some of our lands in Gregory County, as well as Tripp County and in Todd County. So I just want to let you know that we're going to be moving in that direction. I know the Attorney General's office, as well as the state's attorneys, they do not like us getting our lands back because we put it in the trust just to make sure that we don't lose them again. So we're going to continue that effort, and I just want to let you know that, and I stand here with you today that we want to work with you in that regard. And please understand that we're just trying to restore our land base. And with our next seven generations, we want to do that. We have good neighbors on our reservation with the non-Indian farmers and ranchers, and we work with them. We have a good relationship with them. The government shutdown, the federal government shutdown continues over the building of a wall. This shutdown is having some really stark consequences for our tribes. A fair amount of our funding, which is the federal funding, is amounts to about 75% of our budget. This further underscores our need as a tribal people to become self-sufficient and work to expand our economic situation. I would urge South Dakota delegation, Senator Thune, Senator Rounds, and Congressman Dusty Johnson to do what it can to end this shutdown. We will be going over there next week to meet with our three congressionals and have some good frank discussions with them. I know it's going to be difficult, but you know, this is what we're elected for, and we're going to move forward. In conclusion, I would once again extend my thanks to all of you, and I want to congratulate each and every one of you for your election, being elected, re-elected, and for Governor Noem, I'm very appreciative of your reaching out to us, and I want to thank you that I'm going to join with you to work with you and this legislative body. And I want to thank you very much, and I appreciate this opportunity. Lila Pilama Apolo. Thank you.
Madam Secretary.
Senator Langer moves that the joint session be dissolved.
All those in favor of the motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carried. This joint session is hereby dissolved.